Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ebbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, so, you know, we go through this list. We talked about this last time during the Oingo Boingo show, where we go through our list and say, okay, what do we not have represented well this season, right? So we'll say, okay, well, we got a lot of 80s bands. Good, we're covered there. We've got a lot of...
Ska.
We've got a lot of prog, whatever. we need some, like, let's just pick a rock and roll band from, like, the 1990s era, late 90s, early 2000s. And so that's how we stumbled on Third Eye Blind. And it was a good pick, right? Because we're thinking, all right, this is good. We only know two or three songs by Third Eye Blind. You maybe knew one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I knew one. I knew See Me Charmed Life.
And I knew a couple songs. I knew, you know, I didn't know much about the band's history or anything like that. And it seemed like, oh, good, you know, five or six albums, four albums and an EP, whatever it turns out to be. So we thought, all right, perfect. I think you and I, just in our notes to each other over the course of the week, both found this to be a challenging collection to get through.
I will say this going in, that my mom taught me that if I can't say anything nice, not to say anything at all. So it'll be just you talking this episode.
This will be a very short show if both of us adopt that same philosophy. But yeah, that is the trick with this, is that we don't ever want somebody to think, oh yeah, you know, okay, these guys, they don't like country, whatever. So why are they doing a show where they focus on Reba McEntire? And I think you and I both said that this is a great example of why that's not necessarily the case. You know, we can look at this and say, oh no, we don't hate, you know, it's not like we only hate one genre.
No. I can equally hate across all genres.
We can equally hate. We're equal opportunity haters. And, I think saying, okay, maybe saying hate's a little bit rough. Yeah, all right, well, let's just get into it. We'll kind of talk about our opinions while we get through this. But the band, Third Eye Blind, formed in San Francisco in 1993. Stephen Jenkins and Kevin Cadogan signed with Elektra in 1996. It was later called the largest contract for an unsigned act ever.
So I will throw this out going into it. This kind of solidified along with, what was the one we did? We did Toad last couple seasons ago, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I can say that there is definitely a early or like a mid-90s, late 90s to early 2000s sound. Mm-hmm. And these guys kind of are directly in the middle of that late 90s, early 2000s sound definition.
They totally are. There's absolutely, you know, you had your grunge, but then the 90s also had this kind of sound. And I'd say Blink-182 is a good example. Green Day is a good example.
All better examples.
Both examples of bands that do it better, for sure. But this is absolutely, and you know, Gin Blossoms and,
yeah,
and, better, kind of all fit.
Better example. Garbage, better example.
Yep, exactly. That there is a very specific sound. When you take out the grunge, there was this other movement in the 90s, and these guys were right in the middle of the movement.
It's a very apropos description of it.
You like that?
Yes. Uh-huh, yeah.
So the arrangement with the band, Jenkins would write the lyrics, and Cadogan would work out the music. They recorded their first demo in 1993. And then they followed it up with a second demo, which had a little bit more fleshed out musical sound, and a lineup, full band lineup, was recorded in late 1995 through early 1996.
Okay, I will throw this out right now that I really, really struggled with Jenkins' voice. It sounds like a high school kid trying to sing really important, meaningful things, but it just comes out as a high school kid singing songs.
It kind of does. That's a very good description of it. And I'm not going to voice shame anybody.
No.
But there's a very distracting lisp. I don't know. Is it a lisp? Is it a...
It could be a stylistic choice for all we know.
It could be, but it's like Elmer Fudd in some places. Like, it's a very distracting, distinct style of singing that I had a hard time getting past on a lot of the more meaningful songs, which is funny because I picked probably one of their two biggest, most controversial subjects, as one of my songs on the playlist. Spoiler alert, so did Hammond.
But for very, very different reasons.
for absolutely opposite reasons, which I love. I love. I can't wait to talk about that. But yeah, the vocal style really bothered me. And then just kind of the sameness of the musical arrangements.
Yeah, I'll talk about the formula here a little bit later.
Yeah, okay, good. All right. Jenkins produced the Braids cover of Bohemian Rhapsody, which also helped him get him and his musical skills some more attention.
Which is weird, because this is not a great cover.
It's not. It's an R&B cover of Bo Rap that feels very sanitized, like they sanded down the edges to make it smooth. And that's not a song that needs to be smoothed.
No.
You know, it's... it needs some edge to it. Bohemian Rhapsody, though, there's a few songs like this. Bohemian Rhapsody, Paradise by the Dashboard Light is another good example. Songs that are very difficult to cover because Queen, it's a mishmash of smaller songs all jammed into one. Mm-hmm. You know, Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody starts out with this kind of ballad and then goes into a rock thing. Or a slightly, you know, more up-tempo ballad, and then goes into a rock thing, and then does this, and an instrumental, and it's a lot of different genres all jammed into one. So for a band to cover it, they either have to say, we're going to just do the whole thing straight through in our genre, or they have to try and be, a carbon copy of the original.
Yeah.
And neither thing really works. There's a few good examples of where it does work.
Bohemian Polka that Weird Al Yankovic mm-hmm. did is probably one of the most acceptable covers of that song because he just leaned into his stuff.
Yes, exactly. And he can do like a section of the song that's all
accordion.
Accordion. Thank you. I kept thinking xylophone. No, harmonica. No, it's an unusual instrument. Oh, it's a word. Yeah, all accordion. And then he can do another part that's rock with like a slide whistle or whatever. Yeah. And he can totally get away with it. Totally yep. works for him. I've always said that songs like that almost should be covered by a group of bands that all take one part and then kind of do a little relay handoff to the next band. I would love to see like a...
kind of like the Animatrix in music format.
Kind of, yeah, right. It's a good example. Or Four Rooms. Mm-hmm. You know, four directors all just kind of passing the baton one to the other. Anyway, that's my theory on Bohemian Rhapsody. Thank you very much. First album came out in 1997, self-titled, which made it called Third Eye Blind. The lineup for this album was Jenkins on vocals and guitar, Cadogan on guitar, Arian Salazar on bass, and Brad Hargreaves on drums.
Yeah, and like I said, this has the hit, the See Me Charmed Life on it.
see me Charmed Kind of Life, yeah. This album contained five singles, not just See Me Charmed Life, but also Graduate, How's It Going to Be, Losing a Whole Year, and Jumper.
Yeah, See Me Charmed Life. I'm going to keep saying it. See Me Charmed Life.
You're going to do it the whole time? Yeah. All right.
No, I'm stopping now. And for those who don't get it, go back and listen to Def Leppard. See Me Charmed Life peaked at number 4 and was number 1 on the modern rock charts for 8 weeks.
Huge song. And I think Jumper was also a huge hit for him too, because I remember that being almost a bigger hit than Semi-Charmed Life. The when I talked about the two very controversial subjects, Jumper being one of them, talking about sung from the perspective of somebody who's trying to talk someone off the ledge, basically. Mm-hmm. And says, you know, if you don't want to talk to me again, it's fine, just don't jump, kind of thing. And there you go. They opened for shows, a few shows for U2 during this time in their career. Big, big pull for them.
Yeah.
1999, they released the album Blue, which sold 75,000 copies in the first week and 1.25 million by 2003. It wasn't received as well by critics. However, it still sold really well.
Yeah. A Thousand Julys is almost Semi-Charmed Life musical, but then a lot of their stuff is Semi-Charmed musical.
Yeah, And you're talking about similar in arrangement, not that it's a 3-hour show.
No.
Where it's with the actors sing songs.
No, it's just one of those things where once you've kind of heard what their hit's going to be, it's like they just kept going back to that well,
right?
And changing. Right. Let's change the chorus a little bit. No, let's change the verse this time. Let's go change that bridge just a little bit. But
totally,
they really leaned into that because they knew it was going to work, mm-hmm. or they thought it was going to work.
Right, and it just comes out so samey.
Yeah.
The album had 4 singles: Anything, Never Let You Go, 10 Days Late, and Deep Inside of You. Never Let You Go, I remember being a big radio hit out here as well. I don't remember the other ones being radio hits, but I do remember Never Let You Go. For the next 2 albums, the only original members of the band were Jenkins and Hargreaves.
So here we go with Third Eye Blind math. The formula is start slow. You have a big strummer in the middle with or without distortion, depending on the song. And then you end it with a mid-tempo kind of closing.
A little, the denouement after the climax, right? Yeah, basically. Uh-huh, yeah. This is the part of the song where they're smoking cigarettes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is it.
Yeah, I think you're right. We figured out the formula for Reba McEntire. Maybe that's it. I mean, that's where if we can figure out the band's formula, I think that's where we say, okay, that's why we don't like it.
Yeah, I think so.
That means the band's predictable to us, and mm-hmm. and nobody wants that. Just after this album was released, Cadogan was released from the band under mysterious circumstances or controversial circumstances. There was a lawsuit, but it was settled out of court in 2002.
And just for those counting, that is lawsuit number 1.
Oh, really? Are we going to get more? Love it. During this gap between albums, 1999's Blue and the next album, they toured extensively and they built their own recording studio called Morningwood Studios. They worked before the release of Out of the Vein and after on the as of yet unreleased Symphony of Decay EP.
And Symphony of Decay actually never got released. It's still considered unreleased and out there in the musical archives of Third Eye Blind.
It's the Third Eye Blind Chinese Democracy, basically. Except nobody's waiting for it. In 2003, they released Out of the Vein, contained 2 singles, Blinded and Crystal Baller.
There's a definite musical change once Cadogan was gone. Harmonies were added. It sounded a little bit more produced and a little cleaner. There was definitely more money in the studio this time around. So it wasn't a bad step for this album. So I don't know if it was just because of him or just they had more money and were kind of being adventurous.
Maybe. Hiding Out, the song, was used in the special edition of the Out of the Vein and is a making of the album documentary. Didn't sell as well as the prior albums due to a merger in Elektra Records impeding implosion.
That'd be impending implosion.
Impending? Did I say impeding?
Yeah.
It was a slow implosion that people got in the way of. So due to a merger and Elektra Records impending implosion, that's a great band name, Impending Implosion, they had almost no label support for this release. So the label couldn't even afford to back them on this didn't get a lot of attention because of that. In 2004, they and about 80 other acts were dropped by the new controlling label that bought up Elektra Records, Warner Music.
Oh, on Out of the Vein, there's a song called Can't Get Away. Mm-hmm. Now, you can tell how low the bar set was set for me because my notes on this one were, I didn't hate it. Darkness sliding on your hand, the prickles of my skin, and I can feel the changing weather. Sense memories of your ghost. Away from you, I can't get away from you.
Right, exactly. That is the tough part. It's like it was a struggle trying to find 5 songs that I liked. And what helped me, we'll talk about that later. I'll tell you what helped me pick my 5 songs. In 2006, they released a collection. It was a collection culled from the first 3 albums. Cadogan was cut completely from the liner notes, even though he was very much involved in those albums. In 2008, they released Red Star EP. It was an internet-exclusive digital EP. And the single from this album was called Non-Dairy Creamer, and it got released ahead of the EP in 2008.
So I can understand catering to your fans. That totally makes sense. But if people haven't heard of you in like 5 or 6 years, You wouldn't you have released this thing a little more wider, made some more noise about it, been a little bit more out with it if you could? Sure. I mean, doing it is just an internet only thing and exclusive digital kind of thing. I understand the money making behind it, but or the finances behind the release, but to get out there again after half a decade of being, you know, where are they now? Mm-hmm. You'd think they would have made a little bit more noise.
Without a doubt. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kind of surprising. I guess you're just doing it for the fans for that one.
I mean, I don't know. It might have been bigger, but I mean, I just thought they had the one album. I didn't even realize they released Blue. So this is all news to me.
All gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2009, they released Ursa Major. Don't Believe a Word was the only single released from this album. It was originally going to be called The Hideous Strength, but it was delayed from 2007 to 2009 and went through a name change. Bonfire was a radio exclusive single as well, and neither of them charted. Then guitar player Tony Freddie Anelli, sound like Scott there for a second, was fired by the band and later sued the band for songwriting credit and benefits that he was allegedly entitled to. The suit was for $8 million in damages. However, a jury awarded them $438,000. The jury wanted to grant royalties, but the judge ruled against it.
This starts making me wonder what kind of person Jenkins might be to work with, because this is lawsuit number two.
No kidding. $8 million. But we're going to give you $438,000. Be happy with that.
I guess that the third eye attorney was
also blind.
He was also living a semi-charmed life.
Oh, well done. Look at that. Two stabs in one in one shot. In 2011, they released If There Ever Was a Time in support of the Occupy Wall Street movement for a free download. And Jenkins announced that their upcoming new album would be the band's last album. Any new releases would be singles or EPs. In 2013, they released the Third Eye Blind collection, assuming a greatest hits collection. You know, that's one I didn't look at.
It was a greatest hit collection.
Here's three songs, and we're going to do them a couple more times. I guess that would be the live album. In 2015, they released Dopamine, which was their official last full album. Two singles from there, Everything Is Easy and Get Me Out of Here.
The song Back to Zero was really hard to get through. And nothingness is fitting me. I'm going to move back to zero. I'm going to leave no doubt. I'm going to zero you out.
Yeah, I don't even remember that one. I must have...
It just stood out as being exceedingly hard to get through.
Wow, okay. In 2016, they released an EP called We Are Drugs. Contained the single Cop versus Phone Girl.
Phone Girl. What's her powers?
Phone Girl. You know, I'm trying to remember. Wasn't there a big... This was an internet thing, right? Cop versus Phone Girl?
I don't. If you want to look it up now, I'll cut all this out, but I had no idea. I have no idea.
I'm totally looking this up because I feel like there was a deal behind this or a thing behind this. Okay, here we go. The song makes many allusions to a 2015 incident at South Carolina Spring Valley High School where a police officer violently removed an African-American student from class. That's right, because they're talking about the cop's hands around her neck and stuff like that. So that was, I was wondering what this, if there was something to this, and there totally was.
Isn't It Pretty from that single has almost a completely different feel to it. It almost doesn't even sound like them. I wish they'd done more of that.
I'm with you. We'll talk about that song in a little bit. Yeah, overall, this EP I liked a lot more than any of the other ones. I felt like this was... And not just because it was only six songs instead of the usual 12 or whatever, but I think also because it felt like their first attempt to do something out of the ordinary, to do different arrangements, do different musical styles. And I wish they would have done this earlier.
Mm-hmm. They kind of M. Night Shyamalan'd their career.
we were this band the whole time. Rips off their mask.
No, they blew it out of their park with their first album. Uh-huh. And then their second album was pretty good. So let's look at, you know, The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable.
Oh, Unbreakable, right.
And then everything else after that's kind of a downward slide.
Mm-hmm. And then this
until we get to Lady in the Water.
Right. Yeah. The Village. The elevator one. Devil?
Yeah. Devil. Yeah. He just produced that. I don't think he directed that one.
Okay. All right. Well, enough about their albums. Let's talk about their statistics and general notes.
So their debut album, Third Eye Blind, reached number 25 on the U.S. charts and is certified 6 times platinum. Blue was also certified platinum, and See Me Charmed Life won Billboard's Billboard's Modern Rock Track of the Year.
Cool. All right. So let's say, and you know, I don't know if it's not fun for people to listen to us just hate on a band. So I do want to say this. They're talented at playing their instruments.
Mm-hmm. And what they do well.
And what they do well. Jenkins is, a good singer as far as like he's in tune.
He's energetic.
I feel like I'm giving him a participation ribbon. At least you were in tune.
But okay, so here's the thing is, and all these guys can say this about us. They've been signed. They've toured with you too. We haven't.
Right.
So
this
is
true. Yes,
we can pound sand, kind of. Right. But as far as my personal taste, and apparently yours, these guys are not in our bailiwick.
Yeah. They would have succeeded from some better musical, like better writing, both lyrically and musical arrangement, coming up with something that's a little bit more different. Don't stay in these same 6 chords, break out and do these kind of more off the wall kind of things. Stuff that kind of did finally surface on that last EP.
I think that they needed to. So some bands, they challenge each other from album to album and fans fall away. Mm-hmm. These are a group of guys, or one or two guys, who didn't challenge each other enough from album to album, and they just kind of stayed in that same thing.
Yeah.
And a little bit of challenge might have changed all of it.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah, I think it would have done wonders. And if they would have done that evolution earlier on and kept evolving like that, like they did with their last EP, I think I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'd be listening to more of their stuff and I'd be enjoying more of their stuff.
Well, at least you would.
All right, let's talk about if you were to see them in concert, when you looked up from the paperback novel that you were reading. All right, anyway, you go see them in concert. What is the one song that's kind of their Stairway to Heaven? You're not leaving that concert until they do this.
I wouldn't be living the semi-charmed life if I don't hear it. And the other songs on there are Jumper, The Graduate, Motorcycle Drive-By, which is a strange title for a song because it's really, really slow. Mm-hmm. It's a slow song.
Well, you go by slowly on your motorcycle. It's a slow drive-by.
It's a drive-by fruiting. Then How's It Gonna Be? And then of course, Semi-Charmed Life. And my money's on Semi-Charmed Life just because first album, and it's their biggest hit ever.
I feel like Jumper was a bigger hit for them, so I'm going to say Jumper. Clicking on artist statistics, I'm on setlist.fm. Found Third Eye Blind fairly quickly. Here we go. Setlist songs. Jumper, number one, barely above Semi-Charmed Life. I mean, let's face it. There's not a concert where they're going to do one and not the other. I think the numbers are incorrect. These numbers should be a tie. Apparently, there were 10 concerts they did where they did Jumper but did not do Semi-Charmed Life, 465 to 455.
Wow.
I can't imagine. Again, I can't imagine that they do it at one and not at the other. Rounding out the top 10, Graduate, Never Let You Go. I never let you go. Motorcycle drive by, wounded, losing a whole year. How's it going to be? Crystal Baller and Slow Motion.
Crystal Baller is like the sequel to that song by Styx, Crystal Ball.
Yeah, and I need to look at the lyrics for their song, because I'm curious, not Styx, but Third Eye Blind's Crystal Baller, because I'm curious if it's about a guy who's
using speed, meth.
Who's using meth, right? And just is like a total baller.
Yeah.
Like it's a clever title if that's the subject of your song.
Or maybe it's Janine Garofalo's character from The Mystery Men.
That's right. The Crystal Baller. Oh, is she the bowler?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Crystal Baller might even be better. Like if it were done today, that might be a better name. Let's see. Cover wise, the number 17 on the list, they do a cover of Beyonce's Mine. And surprisingly, wow, not till you get down to number 60, Blood Bank, Bon Iver. Oh, then you get down to a lot of covers. Like I Would Die For You by Prince, Baba O'Reilly by The Who, I Want You Back by The Jackson 5. Where is a cover album from these guys? Because maybe we'd want to hear that. I don't know. But that's a perfect lead into our next section, where we talk about what covers we'd like to hear them sing. And I'll go first. So lead singer's got a voice that seems perfectly fit to sing sing kid songs. Like it's a very non-gravelly, it's a very smooth vocal style that he has. So I would have loved to seen them contribute to, I mean, they were around in 1996. They could have done this, that 1990 Schoolhouse Rocks compilation. Mm-hmm. Cause everybody else was in there, Pavement and Folk Implosion and Impending Implosion or Impeding Implosion. Better Than Ezra was in there. So I don't know why these guys weren't, but hearing them do a cover of Rufus Xavier Sarsaparilla from Schoolhouse Rock, I think would be fantastic.
Yeah, you're right. That would be good. I went for a far more bitter option. I put Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone by Glass Tiger. And my notes say, Glass Tiger was a mediocre band from the 80s. Why not have a mediocre band from the 90s cover it?
Right. Why not have a poor man's Gin Blossoms cover a poor man's Duran Duran?
Very well put.
Thank you. Let's get to our playlists, and mine were a little bit less than the I Didn't Hate It or more. I mean, they were higher rank than I Didn't Hate It, but only slightly. I mean, these are songs that I've listened to more than once that aren't on the greatest hits, or as far as I know, aren't on the greatest hits. First one is a song called Slow Motion.
Miss Jones taught me English, but I think I just shot her son. 'Cause he owed me money with a bullet in the chest you cannot run. Now he's bleeding.
This is a demo track that was released on their self-titled album when it was reissued at the, I think, 20th anniversary. But the song actually was originally scheduled or originally planned to be included on the debut album, but the label pulled it. Maybe they thought the subject, having this controversial subject as well as the Jumper controversial subject, was just too much for a debut album. But the song is about a gang shooting, and it's told from the shooter's perspective, and he sees the whole thing in slow motion, the bullet leaving the gun, going into the other person's body, then hitting the ground, etc. And as far as content goes, I think it's even cooler than Jumper as far as like the message it sends. They should have left Jumper off and kept this one on, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. But you can find that on the reissue of their self-titled album. Next one is from the We Are Drugs EP, which is what we talked about earlier. Isn't It Pretty?
Funny because it's hopeless. Just fall down drunk on a Thursday. Pushes the laundry home in a cart like she's homeless. She says, I'm still so shady. Well, you're a princess bag lady. And I lose my thoughts. It's not my fault they make drinks here with six fucking shots. It's so strange. It doesn't seem so strange.
This thing is a really cool, sultry lush electronica sound to it, and so different that I actually had to look over and make sure I was still listening to Third Eye Blind, and that's not even an exaggeration.
Me too. I was like, who are these guys in my playlist all of a sudden?
Well, you got your other band in my Third Eye Blind.
You got your Republica in my Third Eye Blind.
Republica, good example. Yes. Next one is Dopamine from the album of the same name. My side of the bed, I want to push you off the ledge, because I can't get you to feel it. Tell you out there on the edge, you say give it, give it, give it, give it to you, and then you take it till there's nothing left. So put your hands where you want to. Start you know, comparing women to drugs isn't anything new, but again, this feels different from a majority of the rest of that album and a majority of their stuff. So I liked it and included it in my list.
Which is the opposite of that song, Adrenaline.
It is, right. Well, and you know, it carries right over from the We Are Drugs theme too. Yeah. Next two won't surprise anybody. They did a cover of the song Cry, Cry, Cry. I don't know where they did this for, but it sounds like a radio station in studio performance. See the lights of town, wasting my time, and I will try, try, try. When the lights have lost their glow, cry, cry, cry. It was them and Merle Haggard doing a cover of Johnny Cash's Cry, Cry, Cry. And what's cool is it interlaces Merle Haggard talking about Johnny Cash with them singing the song. And it's actually really good. It's very stripped down. Like it's acoustic. It's not fully realized like a lot of their music is, and I like that. And then kind of also speaking about very stripped down, they do a cover of The Clash's Train in Vain. They did it for a tribute to The Clash called Burning London. What's cool is that it feels like they recorded this in a garage. Like it's really raw, which is perfect for a Clash cover. That's what you want, is a raw sound. You don't want it polished like the rest of Third Eye Blind's music. So I'm glad they did that.
Treatment.
That treatment the way they did. How about you?
I picked,
please tell me you limited yourself to five songs.
I'll be honest with you, until I found, Slow Motion, which I'll say I have on my list too, but for very, very, very different reasons, and it's a different version of it. Until I found that, I had nothing, and I was totally fine on coming in here and saying I couldn't find five. Good, here you go, Brian. I mean, I'd
be totally fine. You know that if that ever is the case, we reserve the right to say we couldn't even find five songs we liked.
So the struggle you had with Reba was the struggle that I had with these guys. I was totally willing to just say, I don't have anything. But yeah. I found five, more like four and a half, maybe four. Mm-hmm. But I got five songs on my list. So here we go. Cool. First one is I Want You from the self-titled album. Do you, you're making me want you. An open invitation to the dance. I've been standing at the bar that we're in. No apology because my urge is genuine. And the mystery of your rhythm is a feminine. Here I am and I want to take a hit of your sound. At this point in my listening, I listen in chronological order. And when I got to this point, this was by far the most interesting song I had heard to that point. And I figured that I better squat on that one quick before Brian got it.
No need, but glad you're thinking about that.
Yeah. And then 10 Days Late from the album Blue. This had really, really cool drum parts to it. It had a very, very different rhythmic pattern to it. And also they used a choir, which I kind of thought was neato. I don't even know why. Then I put Slow Motion on my list, and it's their version they put on Blue, and it's an instrumental version. And it's my favorite song out of all five of the albums because it's no singing. It's just music.
That was so funny. I read that. I'm like, wow, okay. I love the fact that we both picked Slow Motion, but we picked two different versions for exactly opposite reasons.
See, you I think you picked it for lyrical content, not for vocal content.
That's true. I didn't pick it because I liked his vocals. I picked it because I like the subject matter.
Yeah, you picked lyrical content. I picked musical content. And what we both didn't mention is vocal content.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I picked
Which is there. There's definitely vocal content in that song.
Yes.
Well, in my version. Anyway.
Yes, there is vocal content. Here's a theme starting. Carnival Barker from Ursa Major. It's another instrumental song. I loved it.
Like a minute and a half long too.
It's like 2 minutes long if that. And then I picked Water Landing, also from Ursa Major, which might be my favorite album just because at least I picked two songs from it. I see you won't let me come. I see you won't let me go. Let me come
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't pick anything from that.
They were trying something different, and I have to give them credit for that. When a band is so locked into their methods and their patterns, as these guys are, when something different is done, either early or late or even on an album at all, you have to give them credit for trying. And mm-hmm. it lets you know that there's more to this band than what they've been doing. And it makes me wish that they had stretched out more often, because I really think that they do have talent and they do have things, but they got comfortable and they got kind of complacent, I think. I don't know. It feels like it. I'm not in their heads, but it just felt like they were just taking easy ways of doing it. I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right. I think we've nailed that on this episode or talking about this with them, is that they had really good success with an early thing and decided to keep trying to do that thing. And maybe it scared him to try and break out of that role until this last EP. I don't know.
Yeah, and Ursa Major.
Or until Ursa.
Yeah, yeah, Ursa Major had some variances in it, and I mean, the variances really stand out, and I can't knock them for that because there are things there that are glimmers of absolute brilliance. I just wish they'd done it more often, and maybe tried to walk out on that thinner ice on occasion to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, exactly right.
And this is totally our opinion. So Third Eye Blind, if you listen, don't kill our children.
Man. Well, that took a dark turn. But yeah, I mean, you know, hate mail, whatever. And you know, if you do have a differing opinion, or if you're Third Eye Blind for that matter, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
So
I do an interview show about creativity. I'd love to talk to you about it.
Yeah, for sure. And if you want some recommendations on songs you should cover, we both have some ideas. Mm-hmm. All right, that's it. That's it about Third Eye Blind. Relatively painless, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's face it. I mean, we've actually had a really solid run where mm-hmm. the only hiccups we've had really are few.
Yeah.
I mean, we're 60.
Well, I wouldn't even say hiccups.
Yeah,
I think the shows where we don't like the artist are as interesting to me as the ones where we do, because we have to talk about why we don't like it. And we have to identify that. We can't just say, yeah, didn't like it.
Yeah.
Eh, move on. I mean, we have to identify, all right, why don't I like this? Why, you know, why is this band that's really popular not doing it for me? What is it that I'm missing or that I'm not getting? So,
and I'm glad, I mean, this is making me a better music consumer doing the show, because it's making me listen to what I like and don't like and why I like and don't like certain things.
For sure. Yep. Agreed. And should be another interesting one next week as we cover the band Sparks. Los Angeles pair of brothers, Russell and Ron Mayle, and the various versions that they've had of themselves, kind of reinventing themselves over the years. I'm really curious to see what you think of these guys, because I've been a Sparks fan for probably longer than I've been an Oingo Boingo fan. And to know, you know, these guys are like Oingo Boingo closer to Zappa. Like if we were to draw a line from Oingo Boingo to Zappa, these guys would be, I think, on that line, maybe even a little closer to Frank Zappa than to Oingo Boingo.
I don't know if I'd ever thought about drawing a continuum between Frank Zappa and Oingo Boingo before.
I don't think anybody has. if you're traveling on a map between Sparksville or between Oingo Boingo Land and Zappaburg,
you'll stop for gas in Sparksville.
Stop for gas at Sparks. Yes. Exactly. Now, I'm curious to see, because these guys, for me, their lyric writing is incredible, at least in the first part of their era. And but the vocals might be an issue for you. I don't want to say too much because I want you to experience it and enjoy it. And anyway, that's what's coming up next week.
And we can also, no, it's not next week. This is a programming note. Let's go ahead and talk about the programming note so people know what's going on.
Yes, I'm going to be on a bike next weekend when we usually are preparing for the show. Usually it takes the weekend and a few days for me to listen to all the music, because I've a lot of listening to Coverville that takes place in the early part of the week. So I usually don't start my 7 days of listening to a band until 3 days in, 4 days in. But this week I'm going to be on a bike, so I'm not going to have a chance to listen to Sparks the way I'd like to and record the next day. So we're taking a week off. Sorry, I know we did that for Memorial Day as well, but we've just got to do it again. And then it's a slow glide through the rest of the season. Trust us, it'll be good. But yes, taking next week off, Sparks will be in 2 weeks, which will help also because Sparks has like 14 or 15 albums or something.
Yeah, I'm thankful for the time this lands out pretty conveniently as far as the listening schedules go.
Mm-hmm. I think so. But I think you're going to enjoy, oh, wow, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24.
What's up, Reba McEntire?
What's that?
What's up, Reba McEntire? Yeah.
No kidding. It's not Zappa levels of prolific.
Yeah. It's not even Iron Maiden. I mean, we've done this before.
That's true. Yeah. All right. Good. Well, I'm going to enjoy this. I hope you do as well. If you want to email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @thesoundography. You can find us on soundography.com. That's our website. It's where everything else is. Check out every episode. We post it right there on soundography.com. If you want to just pick and choose, we prefer you subscribing, but you know, but you do what you do you. We're happy for you to do you. Every episode has show notes that include a link to where you can buy their music on Amazon, the Spotify playlist, where we assemble as much of our playlist as we can.
And then this will all Not be sure there. Some of these... Spotify's all there, I think. I don't know if that...
We'll see about those two covers.
Well, they have the remastered releases on there, so I'm sure it's going to be there. Oh, wait. Oh, your two covers.
My two covers, yeah. I don't know if that Burning London tribute's on there, but we'll see. Okay. You know, whatever's on there, we'll put.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can also support our show. Become a patron and support production of Soundography. You enjoy what you're doing. And it doesn't have to be hundreds of dollars per month, but we won't say no if it is. you can donate as little as a buck or two. And if you donate 50, then you'll tell us. You'll become producer for an episode and tell us what you'd like to hear. And we're now scheduling things for our next season. So now's a good time to mm-hmm. get in with those big donations, big patronage.
I will say this too. I mean, I went to a thing called the Utah Podcast Summit, and they made a one-off run of a Soundography t-shirt for me.
Oh, nice.
And it looks awesome. And if we reach that first goal in Patreon, shirts are included in the quarterly swag bag thing that we'd send out. So it's something to look at, something to think about.
It is cool. It's our album art done as a shirt, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, that is going to wrap things up. So if you want to check us out next week, please do. That's a silly thing to say. Take that out.
If you want to check us out next week, we have lots of other episodes of other things.
That's right, because we won't be here next week. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.